This podcast is intended for investment professionals. Hello, and welcome back to Elgium Talks. I'm your host, Mark Chappell, and this is the podcast from Legal & General Investment Management. I want to take you for a moment across the Atlantic, where the race for the 2020 Democratic presidential nomination is just kicking off. Already, there are about 20 candidates, each with their own visions of major policies which could fundamentally reshape US government spending. I'm talking about things like the Green New Deal, NHS-style universal healthcare, free university tuition, and a major tax cut for the middle class. But the question of how to pay for these programs has surfaced a once fringe economic school of thought, modern monetary theory. Branded a dangerous proposition by ECB economists, its basic premise is that countries that issue their own currencies, such as the US or the UK, can never run out of money the way people or businesses can, that the only real limit on their spending is inflation. This week, we're going to dive deep into the theory with returning guest fund manager Alex Mack on the world of MMT and what it could mean for inflation and your portfolios. Alex, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, cheers. Great to be here.
So the world of MMT, modern monetary theory, has really just kind of, it's sprung up in the consciousness. You're seeing Bloomberg opinion articles, you're seeing explainers everywhere. People are branding it everything. Japanese policymakers have said, we're not going to touch this at all. So what's at the central premise of MMT? What makes this such a unique policy in so many minds that these people have written their position papers about?
Yeah, no, so I think when I look at it, I want to pull out what I think are the big things, which I think the question you're asking. But I also want to say that I think the most important thing we can get from this is to look at what it tells us about the state of politics and what it tells us about future policy making, without thinking about, you know, without needing to make a prediction about who's going to win the next general election in the UK, who's going to control the branches of power in the US. But come back to your question, what I think are the three big strands that are worth looking at. The idea that a government that issues its own currency and finances itself through that currency can buy anything that's for sale in that currency. So there's effectively no financing constraint here.
Okay. You can buy whatever you like, as long as it's someone is going to willing to sell it to you in sterling.
If you're the UK government and you are the issuer of sterling and you fund yourself in sterling, you can buy anything priced in sterling, no matter what the price. It falls from that the government's finances, the government is only constrained by inflation. So that's number one. Mm-hmm. I'd also want to bring out from it the idea that if you have no financing constraint, then it makes sense that, you know, why would you settle for having any unemployment at all in the economy if you believe that, you know, there is some negative to having a positive level of unemployment. And so I'd say that was number two, that they don't believe that unemployment should be used as a swing factor to control inflation. And the third that I'd want to pick out from it is that they would switch. So at the moment, we use monetary policy, and we tend to think of monetary policy as the main, most important tool to control business cycles.
Completely. Something happens, you turn to Mark Carney at the Bank of England, and you wait for that statement. And it's the reason why these committee meetings are watched so carefully.
But they would turn that on its head and say that, you know, fiscal policy should be used as the main lever rather than monetary policy, that it's a much better tool.
Better in what way?
Well, you could argue, you know, it's, you, we could talk about the efficiency of the two. So, so if I'm using interest rates, there's a slightly indirect link between me moving my policy lever and something happening in the economy on the other end. Mm-hmm. It's much more direct when the government's spending. You spend money, and you get activity immediately, and the lag is, it's less variable and it's a lot shorter. So that's number one. And two, I can be a lot more specific with it. I can have much more precise goals. Than interest rates are a very blunt tool. You move the interest rate and you let everything settle out. I can be much more specific with fiscal policy than I can be with monetary policy.
So I want to go back to that point that you brought up about the political trend moving towards this less focus on deficits and government responsibility. I mean, to take one longtime deficit hawk, Bob Corker, a politician in the US, after he was given up his push for fiscal responsibility in the federal government, and he said, "Yeah, I'm over it. It's just not going to happen. The American people today are just not interested in it." And is that emblematic of what we're saying here?
Yeah, I mean, I think that speaks to the core point that I want to get onto, that however you look at it, whether we're talking about MMT, and it is largely associated with left-wing policymakers, but if we want to look at a broader spectrum, and yeah. Bob Corker, Republican, former Republican senator from Tennessee, and a long-time deficit hawk,
yeah.
You know, that quote, that the deficits just don't matter. I mean, and there are others as well. Even Mick Mulvaney, if we stick in the US, who was, again, a former Republican deficit hawk, appointed to work in the White House outlining budgets, make it simple.
So in theory, you'd expect a person like that to come in and just slash everything.
What he said he would like to see enacted. Mm. But no, again, similar quotes. It just doesn't matter. It speaks to a wider point. It's difficult to find anybody who really argues difficult to find people that are arguing and arguing successfully, being loud, being heard for fiscal constraint.
Is this a can we understand this in the UK most especially as a reaction against austerity, or just a fundamental result of persistently low inflation rates?
Yeah, I mean, I think that second point is where I land. That you've moved. It's been a very long time since we've had any real inflation problem. We've suffered any consequences of that. Mm-hmm. And as you move further and further and further away, I think that you become less and less scared of it, and you start to believe that it's not there. It's not a problem for us.
I just would like to nail down what this might mean for investors who might otherwise be inclined to hand wave this issue away and say, is this still fringe economic theory? As you say, no one's really planning to implement an idea of modern monetary theory in wholesale when they're next in power. Why should we as investors be concerned or pay attention to this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you're right. There is a lot of hand waving, and there's a lot of this is stupid, and they're all idiots, and it doesn't add up, and all of that kind of stuff. But I think what you really need to take from it is that the politics of larger deficits have become a lot easier. So it's a lot easier for governments to run bigger deficits, and if you believe that's the case, and you view it with a backdrop of particularly in take the UK, you look at that with a backdrop of, well, the government has large unfunded liabilities that are going to come due. We're going to need to pay for an aging population, and what does that mean? It means that we've got pensions to pay, we've got healthcare to pay, that we don't have a pot of money sitting waiting to pay for. So you have these big spending promises out there in the future, and if there isn't much concern about fiscal prudence or sound finances isn't something that people are willing to, that's not a hill many politicians are willing to die on, then we're much more likely to get more fiscal spending, and because of that, you're much more likely to get more inflation.
So really, inflationary pressure is really what investors should be looking out for as this kind of idea of larger deficits has become more mainstream.
Absolutely. If you believe that the politics of if you're willing to accept, as I am, that the politics of bigger fiscal deficits is become a lot easier, then I think it's a logical step to get to. There is going to be more inflation. Then how much more? You're asking questions about what do we still have an inflation targeting regime that's similar to the one that we have now that is proven to be pretty credible.
Yeah.
You know, if you look back, inflation expectations have become pretty well anchored. Around targets. We can say that, you know, yeah, they're a bit below 2%, and that's a huge problem, but we're not talking big numbers here. We're not talking about really anchored around zero. We're still within the vicinity of 2%.
In the vicinity, and yet inflation rates have consistently undershot expectations. Is that undershooting giving people more credence to their ideas that really we should be less worried about it?
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. I mean, if you take the first point that we said earlier, you know, the government finances are only constrained by inflation. Mm. We don't see much of it, so that we're not at the constraints. You know, it's still a guess as to how far you are away from that constraint. But you could draw parallels here with the policy that we operate at the moment. So you've seen central banks around the world have become consistently more dovish, or they've wanted to keep rates lower and do more alternative policy as inflation rates have missed. So it's not just that we're not just seeing that on the fiscal side. We're seeing the same reaction under our current framework from monetary policymakers. You know, as inflation continues to undershoot, they want to do more. It's not just on the fiscal side. But yeah, we're seeing it on both. We're seeing it across the policy spectrum.
So if we're putting that inflation targeting framework back on the shoulders of the government rather than the central bank, what does a credible targeting framework look like under MMT?
We've kept central banks at arm's length from the government. So, you know, yes, it's still a wing of the government, but the body that's controlling the value, in charge of controlling the value of currency, which is the central bank, you know, the remit is to keep inflation low and stable, you know, broadly. In other words, to maintain the value of the pound, give or take a little bit every year. And you know, it's viewed as credible because we've taken it away from politicians who are incentivized by regular elections. And we put it in the hands of people who have some job security. It's hard to fire them. They're not up for regular election. The terms don't line up with government terms. So you know, just going to be booted out by the next guy if the next person didn't like the policy that you followed. And there's some degree of operational independence that they've been able to establish a framework that is viewed as credible. And you see that. You see that in the anchoring of inflation expectations. And certainly people would argue that, you know, a lot of people, especially central bankers, would argue that, you know, the decline in inflation that we've seen, not just the decline in inflation that we've seen, is wholly attributable to that kind of the changes that we've made.
To those changes that they've...
So from taking control away from politicians and mm-hmm. giving it to central bankers.
Hence, so you see the central bankers see the continued independence of central banks really as part of the solution.
That this is a credible inflation target framework and we shouldn't throw it out.
And credible in that case means this independence, that when they set we're going to target 2% inflation, we're really going to try and get there.
Yeah.
What's credible in that sense?
Well, maybe we compare it to if I'm a politician, it's hard for me to take money away from somebody. Or to make things
you
worse.
You as a politician.
Me as a politician. It's hard for me to do that and remain popular. Mm. And I need to remain popular if I'm going to get elected. And so it's hard for me. I have to balance that. And so I'm always going to be incentivized to do a little bit more and to accept a little bit more inflation over a long period of time. So in order not to cause the pain that gets me booted out. And you know, this isn't a problem that people who promote MMT aren't aware of. But they would generally say that it's a problem with politics rather than a problem with a theory.
Exactly. So you need a better quality of politicians under an MMT framework in order to make those hard decisions to take away the spending when they need to.
And I just find it very hard to believe that you're going to get that. Mm. And I find it hard to believe that we will allow. So we've allowed effectively monetary policy to be run by a bunch of bureaucrats, but I can't believe that we would allow fiscal policy to be run in the same way.
I'd like to turn to how fiscal policy under an MMT framework could be used to control the cycle, the market ups, market downs. What is MMT putting on the politicians that's new, whereas it's currently on Mark Carney and the Bank of England?
Fiscal policy does move with a cycle at the moment. Mm-hmm. In most countries, there are automatic stabilizers.
Automatic stabilizers. What are these?
Yeah. So this is effectively spending that you don't. In order to spend the money, I don't need to go back to government. I don't have to go back to get permission to do it.
Yeah.
So things like unemployment benefits are a great example. You know, as the economy suffers, more people become unemployed. Mm. The government spends more money. paying unemployment benefits. And then as the economy picks up, less people are unemployed, the government spends less money on unemployment benefits and actually takes more money away in taxes on the other side. Mm-hmm. So you see this swing in government spending. So government spending picks up when the economy goes down and it cools off when the economy is doing quite well. MMT, most MMT advocates take this a little bit further, and they combine it with the idea that why would you have any unemployment? That unemployment is a choice for them. That it's always a policy choice, because if we come back to the first thing, that any government can buy anything that's for sale.
Yeah.
In its currency, and all of the unemployed labor is for sale in its currency.
So they could buy up everyone who currently doesn't have a job and say, here is a minimum wage job with this jobs guarantee, as it were.
Yes. Yeah. That they can buy all of the labor, so that it falls out from that. That, you know, and most MMTs would argue this, that the unemployment is a choice for the government because it's choosing not to buy it. Mm. It's choosing to abide by a fiscal constraint that doesn't really exist.
Yeah,
would be the argument. But effectively, that it means that if you're giving everybody a job, or you're offering everybody a job, you're not forcing them to do it. It's not work for benefits or anything like that. But you're offering a job at a minimum wage level that increases over time. Then you have an even bigger automatic stabilizer, and it would work in the same way. They would argue that in the good times, that people would come off. People would move away from the guaranteed job and into private sector employment, which presumably has the higher wages as the economy picks up.
But surely MMT still requires just some discretionary tax increases and or spending.
Absolutely right. I mean, then this is, so if you, how do you, you still need to cut back spending to control the economy, and ultimately come back to the credibility problem.
Yeah.
That's the question, really. I mean, do you trust, will we trust politicians to maintain the value of the currency as much as we trust central bankers? And the answer is probably no. They're always going to be incentivized to do more, to spend a little bit more, to give a little bit more away, and to take a little bit less away.
And to translate that into investment portfolios, that means we'd probably expect a significant or fairly significant repricing in inflation as a result of that.
Well, if you're going to do away with the inflation targeting framework and you're going to move to something like an MMT, let's say that we move to MMT after the US elections.
Yeah.
Democrats win, clean sweep, and whoever's in power wants to implement this. Yeah. And they go to the likes of Stephanie Kelton or Randy Ray, and they ask a big MMT economist, and they say, you know, what do we do? How do we do this?
Yeah.
And you completely get rid of, you take the power to control the economy away from monetary policymakers, and you give it to fiscal policymakers, then yes, I think you'd see a very rapid pricing of inflation as we price that incredibility in. But I think that's unlikely to happen. I mean, this, like we said at the beginning, I don't think there's a coherent policy here to implement tomorrow. But I think what's more likely is that you see less constraints on fiscal spending, and you see more inflation, but not necessarily radically so. It only happens radically if you're going to throw away the credibility established by the current framework.
So if you don't throw that away, you could still see some upward pressure, but you ultimately don't see too much of a fundamental shift in the way that we currently understand monetary and fiscal policy.
Yeah. And I mean, we were talking earlier, and you said that, is low inflation the new normal everywhere? And that's kind of priced into markets as well, that very low and often lower than central banks' targets is what markets are expecting for the foreseeable future, and that doesn't necessarily have to be the case. That you can recenter that inflation distribution around your inflation targets.
So to try and wrap my hands around this big technical deep dive of a conversation we've had, I feel like we're talking about the propensity for new fiscal spending, whether it's under the title of MMT or something still similar, perhaps MMT-style policies, that we're likely to see increased inflation, and that's what investors should really be looking out for. Is that right, Alex?
I think that the three things that I take from MMT that are worth thinking about are government finances are only constrained, the idea that government finances are only constrained by inflation, the idea that unemployment is always and everywhere a choice for the government, and kind of follows on from the financing point. You need that to be true.
Back to the jobs guarantee we were talking about.
And three, that you should use fiscal policy as the main lever to control economic cycles. But then, so I'd say that those are the ideas that I would take and think about. And then when I'm thinking about MMT more broadly, I think that the main point, the biggest point, and really the thing that I think about most when I'm thinking about our clients' funds, is that the politics of fiscal spending has become a lot easier. It's become a lot easier to get bigger deficits. And if you believe that that's true, then we're more likely to get more fiscal spending, to get more inflation as well.
On the back of that. Thank you so much for joining us, Alex.
Cheers. Thanks for having us.
Always a pleasure. And thank you for listening. Be sure to listen again next week for more Elgium Talks.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.